Welcome to the Space Cave, a big warg to all of you space burgers out there. Thank you for supporting the show, especially to Jennifer, the latest Patreon subscriber. Really does help keep the show on track and moving and devoid of those annoying ads. It is brought to you strictly by the generosity of listeners like you. If you live in Los Angeles, The Junk Show is this Sunday, November 12th. At 8 p.m. at the Copper Still on Beverly Boulevard. You can find information at davidhunsberger.com. All right, let's check in with a citizen of planet Earth. Okay, hello, Fat Camp. How are you guys?
We're great.
We're good. We're great.
We had to just ask the people at Starbucks to turn off the music because we couldn't hear anything. And it was very awkward. Yeah.
So you guys can do, theoretically, I'm hoping on my end, maybe your first interview as a band. Probably not, though, right? You guys are getting out there, getting in the mix.
You're our first interview like this.
Yeah, like this. Yeah. Our past interviews have been like separate, like individual interviews.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the first one over Skype from a Starbucks with the three of you together. Yeah. Hey, yes. That's great. And you're doing a little bit of a tour. I listened to your, I'll post a link to the, you guys put up your first like sort of EP or album on YouTube. It's good.
Yes. Thanks. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. It's like, well, you got like, it's like 27 minutes. So it's kind of short, but it's quite a few songs.
It's our first one. So, you know, our biggest track on Spotify actually just broke 50,000 views like 2 days ago. So
hey, nice.
We're pretty happy about that because we're still a pretty small band
on the come up.
Yeah, on the come up.
Cool. Well, that's good. I'm glad you guys are getting out there. And you're from, well, first of all, you're from El Paso, but I want to know how you landed on the name Fat Camp.
Oh, it's because we were all kind of fat when we started the band because we were like locked in a studio a lot and we just didn't know how to live like that. We were drinking a lot and eating a lot of chips.
We were drinking a lot.
Yeah. And one day we like looked at each other, and then this guy was like, "Oh, we're all kind of fat." And he was like, "What if we call ourselves Fat Camp?" And so that's how we began.
And then it was born. And then you're in the middle, Mario. Who is to your right, my left? Cigarette behind the ear, like a rocker.
I'm Malone.
Malone. Okay.
Yeah, I drum.
Okay. Yes. Malone on drums. All right.
Yeah.
And then
am I next?
Yeah.
You're the only one remaining, so yes.
I play bass, and I recorded the album with these guys, but did the production mainly.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're kind of the, did you say Greg or Grant?
Grant.
Grant, like okay. Yeah, gotcha. And you, so you're kind of like the
mastermind behind the whole operation.
Yeah, you're making it happen. And then what? So you guys are pretty committed, it sounds like, to like being a band, touring, getting out there, getting your name out there, getting it played on podcasts, things like that.
Yeah.
How's it been going so far? How long have you been doing this project?
We started in what, like late April?
We started recording in late April. The album came out in September, and since we've just been sending emails left and right to, you know, everything we can to think.
Not very many responses. So
not a lot of responses, but it's good. Because we started playing in like backyards and like, you know, like wherever we could. And we still like, you know, like we've been getting a lot of more venues and getting our music played like in other cities, which is pretty nice.
We have a weirdly big following in Portugal.
Yeah, we got on college radio in Portugal, and the listeners like skyrocketed for that one country.
So yeah,
it feels weird.
Yeah,
good, I think.
Yeah, that's how it goes, right. though, right? Ideally, you just you spike up somewhere and then just take advantage of that, capitalize on it, tour there. You might get to go tour Portugal. That'd be great.
Yeah. I don't know how they found us. Like, one day, I don't know where, I just got, like, a notification saying, like, oh, you guys were played on the radio station in Portugal, you know, and suddenly, like, we have, like, a following there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. All right, so getting started in El Paso, are you guys at the drive-in fans, or is that way too before your time?
Oh, boy, yeah. We hear a lot about those guys.
Oh, okay.
And obviously, we're growing into the shadow of Khalid.
Yeah, Khalid.
Yeah. Let's see, what else from El Paso? Because your style reminds me more of, you know, that song "Sleepwalking" by Richie Valens. You know, it's just more of instrumental.
Oh, like the guitars, the whatever.
Yeah.
I actually love that song. It's crazy.
Yeah, you guys. To me, it's kind of in that same vein, but it's a little more maybe poppy, or you know, you can feel that you guys are young, but I don't mean that in like a "oh girl" kind of way. You can feel like this exuberance, like some excitement behind it when guys sit down. Like, how serious do you take it? You're drinking all the time, but like if someone starts being real sloppy on their instrument, do you guys go, "Hey, take this shit seriously"?
We don't. We don't like that. We don't like being sloppy. Yeah, we played some sloppy shows before, but we fixed it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We just he's not here today, but. Yeah. We just added a new member playing synth and lead guitar.
Yeah, because the way, you know how on the album there's like a bunch of like, there's synthesizers and lead guitars? We just used to not have that. We would just play like with me on rhythm guitar and singing, him on bass and him on drums.
Our live shows were a lot more like rocky.
Yeah, three piece, so you kind of have to be. So now you, with the four,
we sound like an actual indie band.
And you're how are you traveling? In one of your mom's cars, or did you guys rent a van, or what's going on?
We just, caravan.
Just gonna shove Jeep. Everything in my Jeep. And
just like that. We played all over the city. Honestly, we still haven't played any shows out of town, but
we have some coming up this winter.
Yeah, we have a small tour coming up this winter.
Right, you guys. So as this comes out, which is now November, hopefully the word gets out in time where people can get on board with Fat Camp ahead of schedule, get tickets, and you're going to play some shows in Texas, and you're heading down to my old stomping grounds in Austin. Where are you playing there?
Oh, we have no idea yet. We're still figuring that one out.
Okay. Well, if anyone listening has a house or something like that, I know you guys don't want to play backyard shows anymore, but perhaps.
I love playing backyard because you can get drunk because we're still underage.
We like really started in house shows, and even though we have opportunities in bigger venues now, like we still don't want to turn down stuff like that. For the sake of.
Okay. And. So you'll take anything at this point, but as it's happening in Portugal, it's likely that, and you probably don't want to talk about this to like jinx it, but every now and again a band gets that weird break, and then the next thing you know, you're in big venues, you're touring all over the place, but sometimes that doesn't happen, and you've got to just keep touring backyards and small venues. Are you in it for the long haul?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm so in it for the long haul.
For sure. We put a lot of our... eggs in this basket.
A lot of time, a lot of sweat.
Okay, so here are some things that can derail that. Firstly, are you guys high school friends? How did the band form?
Yes, we were all on the same drum line.
Yeah.
In high school.
So and actual band kids. Okay.
Yeah, we were band kids.
And the funny thing, he played bass, I played keys.
Yeah.
And
I played Glockenspiel. which is a useless skill that it has not helped me in anything musically or otherwise. I met these guys, so.
Yeah, and then like once we left high school, we were all kind of like, oh shit, we're like, at least I know I wasn't really doing anything with music. So one day I was at a venue and like I was so tired of not playing shows because I was watching the guys and I was like, can I cuss?
You can do whatever you like, man.
I was like, I can fucking do that. Like, I can play. And so, like, I was on my phone, and some girl asked me if I had a band, and I lied, and I said yes. And then she was like, okay, you're set for a show on this day, like, in, like, 2 days. And I was like, oh, crap. So I hit up these guys, because they were my high school buddies, and he just started playing drums, and he started playing bass. We played some love songs.
Nice. And played your first show, and then look where you are now. Headed off on tour, got an album recorded.
In a Starbucks.
In a Starbucks doing your first major interview.
Oh, yeah.
I've never interviewed a full band prior to this either, so this is big for me as well. And I'm really rooting for you guys. I want you to make sure to wear condoms. Don't get DUIs.
No, dude.
That'll break up a band. You're like, oh, man, we were going great. Then, you know, Grant got his girlfriend pregnant, had to get an insurance job, and we broke up. Fat Cap is no more. So stay focused, and I think you'll be fine. And I'm gonna play a song at the end of this episode, and expect your numbers in the United States to just skyrocket after that as well.
Cool, man. That's awesome.
All right, Fat Camp. Well, thanks, fellas. It's nice chatting with you guys, and keep making cool music, and thanks for passing it my way.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We love you.
All right. See you guys.
All right. See ya. Goodbye.
Oh, I should have said citizens of planet Earth. Those Fat Camp kids. I should have taken a screenshot of our Skype, and I apologize if the sound wasn't great as they were huddled around a phone in the middle of a Starbucks that was kind of busy, and so not the greatest sound quality. And I think you can catch at the end that the Starbucks establishment had, adhered to their wishes briefly and turned off the music. And then after a while, they're like, all right, fellas, let's wrap it up. But I like they're showing the initiative and getting out there and trying to get their music played, and we'll play some at the end because I think they've got something. I'll let you be the judge, though. Maybe if you guys bombard me with a bunch of negative comments, we'll go to their house and knock on the door and tell them to just cut it out. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think you will like it as well. Before we get to that, though, let's get to the bulk of the series. This is a gentleman that I've known for quite a while now. When you move to Los Angeles and you're running around the same haunts and doing stand-up comedy and whatever else, just kind of in the comedy scene, you get to be friends with people, and or you become these kind of acquaintances where you see one another a lot. And I feel like he and I are the type that when we see one another at the party or things like that, we'll have a chat. But you know, you maybe don't get to know anyone all that well doing that. So it's nice to have someone like that come in and sit down and have a more in-depth one-on-one conversation, especially someone that was surprising in that, you know, I ran into him and he said, "Hey, by the way, I used to work in science," and that was surprising to me. I don't know why. He's just a really silly, fun, carefree kind of dude, and I typically associate science folks, even the fun ones, with there's got to be some logic behind why this is funny or things like that, and he's just genuinely a silly, fun person to watch. And anyway, you'll hear all about his story, at least part one of it, right now with my pal Tony Sam. Enjoy. Well, Tony Sam, we are officially, finally podcasting.
Are we on the air?
We're live on the air, going out to a lot of long-time listeners. Maybe some
first-time
callers.
Caller, long-time listener.
This has been several months in the
making. Wait, we're just jumping right into it?
I don't have like a big... clearly, I don't have any notes or anything. I don't like to prepare or do any necessary...
No, but there's no da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Tonight, my first guest... An only guest will blow your asshole through your armhole.
Wait, the only guest will blow your asshole through your armhole?
Yeah.
Where's this armhole you speak of?
Smoke bomb.
he
disappeared.
That guy, he's absconded. At the end of that joke.
Where'd he go? Boom, I'm behind you.
So you clearly didn't listen to an episode. I never do that either. I've never like...
I always forget that sometimes you just jump right in. Well, also you just started talking and you gave me no, warning. You're like, hey, we're in it.
Yeah, I think there's something more like...
Visceral.
No, what's the term? There's a bit of like authenticity to that.
To, people to like, ambush people with the
yeah,
podcast.
They're getting pure uncut Tony Sam right now.
I didn't do my verbal exercises.
I know.
Many mumbling mice.
Oh, that's yours?
I got to stretch it out.
I do. feeling prepared. My new friend Sinead, who's a singer, taught me this one. You kind of pull your lips.
I wish you could all see this.
Yeah, so you grab the corners of your mouth, pull
like
them apart.
This.
Yeah, you're making like a
Droopy the dog.
When your face looks like Howard the Duck.
Oh.
And then you and try to make him.
That makes me so mad.
And that'll really loosen up your vocal cords.
The number one podcast on the interwebs.
People are flocking to turn off their dials.
Why do I have this old-timey stereo anyways?
And my podcasts are all broadcasted through.
the Wurlitzer and its podcasting capability.
So the way this came about is you studied ecology. You're a science guy, secretly science guy. Now you work on television shows and just got done with a cooking show with Michael McKean that'll be out soon.
It's airing right as we speak.
So technically I'm correct because
that's right.
The next one will be out soon?
Yeah, they air every Sunday, but it's like the ridiculousness of the cooking channel. They air the shit out of this show. It's
nice.
It's their bread and butter, I guess. But this is season 3, and this season we had 20 episodes. So
cool, man.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun, and you learn things. It's the history of food, and it's whether or not it's these myths about food facts are true.
Ooh, that sounds like something I'd be into.
I'd really like to sink my teeth into that. Yum, 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 yum. I love facts.
I like that you just looked sort of deadly, like you're looking at your own nose as you did that.
Because I become the character.
You get deep into
it. I just transform.
You just got back from an audition, so you're in the you're in your play skin.
It's infectious. Oh, I just it's good to be back.
How are you? You don't drink beer, so I got you a light. I refuse to give you, like, shitty beer. So I think this one is a nice one from Beechwood Brewing.
Can we cheers on the microphone?
Sure. Let's see if it'll pick up.
Hold on. Oops, we got that.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Good Foley work.
Hey, here's looking up your old address, kid. That my grandfather used to say that, and I never knew what it meant.
Here's looking up your old address, kid.
Yep.
That's absurd.
He'd also say things like, on the other hand, warts.
Who is this guy?
I don't know, but he's the best.
Did he have dementia?
No, he just was full of old-timey zingers.
On the other hand, warts.
He also said one that probably is, it probably doesn't play today. It's maybe a little off color. Mm-hmm. But he'd always say, he'd ask him how long ago, how long is a Chinaman? He would say Chinaman.
Yeah. Like in the Big Lebowski, in the parlance of our times. Chinaman is not the preferred nomenclature.
That's right.
He would say, how long is the Chinaman?
Yeah, because the name he was saying, he would imply that Howie Long. He's like, how long? Howie Long?
Is it Chinaman?
I guess. Look, he's dead now.
The only one that made sense was, on the other hand, warts.
What do you mean? He's saying that the guy, you know, like... How long? That's the guy's name is what he's saying.
But why is he a Chinaman?
I don't know, because it sounds Chinese. Was something he was. He was stupid. The wave of comprehension just came over you like a blanket.
It really did.
What a sight to see.
Jesus. People listening was like, yeah, move on. He's saying, like his
everyone,
name
everyone's
is...
shouting at the the old timey podcasting stereo. What's wrong with you?
How long? Got it.
Oh boy, it's good to be on board, huh?
It really is. My
so goodness. I wanted to correct you. So you said ecology, but my degree was actually in marine and molecular biology with a minor in chemistry.
So I was not even remotely close.
Well, I mean, ecology is part of biology.
You know what I think brought it about is I had just done an episode on ecology, and you said, like, what'd you talk about? And I mentioned marine life, and you're like, oh, that's what I studied. So that's where I made the connection. I went backwards instead of to the marine.
Oh.
So you wanted to be a marine biologist.
I did.
And
it's weird because I grew up in Chicago.
And what this is like
not a lot of oceans.
Yeah, but George Costanza, remember that episode where he on Seinfeld like gets thrust into being a marine biologist?
That's right.
it's kind of like a good fake career. People are like, this is my boyfriend. He's a marine biologist.
Right.
Was like, that a part of it?
Well, no. I just, this was before Seinfeld. We have one of the best aquariums in the country in Chicago, The Shed.
Mm-hmm. And cool name for an aquarium.
It's actually one of the first public aquariums in the United States.
Not quite as good as The Garage. Another fantastic aquarium. That's in Baltimore. But
is it called The Garage?
No, but I had you going.
Oh, the right. The Shed. No, I don't get it. How is he long? Chinese?
It's How Long is his name.
That's right. The How Long Aquarium. Oh, my grandfather.
All right. So you have a great aquarium. You would go see the animals trapped in there swimming around.
Yeah. So this aquarium, it's interesting history, actually. It was built, I believe, in the early 20s, which the fact that they had a seawater aquarium in Chicago, you know, thousands of miles from the ocean.
Yeah.
They would ship seawater via train from the Florida Keys to Chicago.
If you are joshing me, I'm going with it.
No, it's true.
Because I was going to add, I initially thought that they must have piped it. Then I thought, what if they would just put salt into water?
No, I mean, iodized salt in water doesn't make seawater. It's very complex. But the art, I will call it an art, of mixing seawater together didn't even come about until probably the 60s or 70s. So imagine, whoa, that's like 50 years they were shipping seawater,
yeah,
to Chicago via train.
Just on the doorsteps of getting to the moon, and they're like, let's ship in more seawater. We can't, right, crack the recipe.
Pretty amazing. And the original tank is in the main building. So it's the glass, you can tell, has warped a little through time, and mm-hmm, it's very thick. And it's just very impressive that they did that. And they probably went through fish like crazy. They're like, I don't get it. They keep dying. More seawater, Charlie.
I'm piping, or I'm training it in as fast as I can.
That's right. They keep dying. We can't get the water here fast enough.
I wonder if that's like kind of embarrassing for the train conductor. Like, what are you hauling? It's
seawater, matey.
Would it have fish and such swimming around in it, or would they strain it in some way?
No, I'm imagining they would just pump it in and probably try and put it through some filters.
Mm-hmm.
But the weight, think about the amount of weight that is, because it's about 8 pounds a gallon.
Yeah.
And if you've got a boxcar, just they'd have to have special train cars just to carry it, like with extra suspension.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you've ever followed like a pickup truck with one of those, like, it looks like a pig on the back, but it's this tank. It's got like four legs on it. Mm-hmm. I think they call them pigs. But just one of those, like we'll say it's 150 gallons. So what is that times 8? It's like almost 1,000 pounds.
Yeah. 150 times 8 would be, yeah, like 900 pounds. Is that right? 15 times 8?
That would be like 1,200 or something.
5, 4, no, it's, yeah, so, it's 1,200.
So 800 plus another 400 is 1,200.
Yeah. Okay, we got to it. Figured it out.
We're smart.
I'm trying to picture, because you seem like, I don't imagine you ever being like kind of a,
I was a bad a scientist.
Stoic kid.
Oh, I thought that's where you're going.
Like if you, like if in, like there were two sides of you. Like I just want to be like silly and fun, but I also really want to study marine life. And what, was there a certain animal?
I just loved fish and just the whole idea of the ocean, you know? I never watched, like, I think it was before my time anyway, Sea Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Lloyd Bridges? I can't really put my finger on what specifically. I remember I'd read about it, and I had all these books when I was a kid, you know, just like picture books of the ocean. It was so far out of my wheelhouse that it seemed like the thing that I should do because it seemed impossible.
Man, no one ever takes on that challenge when something seems impossible. And then, like, you get to any age in life and you look at whoever took a different course, astronauts, professional athletes, architects, whatever, and you're like, oh, someone's doing that. Then you went this route or whatever it might be. So I like that you chose one of them. And, like,
Yeah, I got accepted into the University of Miami, but my family didn't have any money.
Oh, okay.
So this was a very prestigious school. This is like the Rosenthal School of Marine Sciences, which is one of the best marine biology programs in the country. And I was kind of bummed out. Because I didn't apply at many schools. I applied to this school downstate Illinois, Millikan, because I thought maybe I'd go for art, because I was also artsy, for graphic design. And then I got accepted into this other school. But I also got a free 2-year ride at this community college. And my parents were like, hey, maybe you should do that. Maybe you should take up that free college. And
so
I did.
I'm so curious to you as a little kid, because you've kind of played it off that like maybe you weren't diligent or that focused, but to have like an awareness of your strengths, be like, I'm pretty good at art. And so, because I think a lot of kids just go like, I don't know, I'm supposed to go to college. I'll just apply. If I get in, I guess I'll figure out what to study. And then, because I think a lot of times when parents have worked so hard and like whether saved up or like you're going to college, then a lot of kids are like, okay, well, this wasn't really my goal. This was like your goal that you set. This sounds like it sort of became yours to like, if I'm going, I'm doing these things.
It's interesting because I always, well, not always, but for a while I did what I thought I should do, which probably my 20s are defined by me thinking I should do this thing that people want me to do, not what I want to do. And so the graphic design thing was because I had a girlfriend when I was a senior in high school who she thought that art didn't pay any money and this and that. And so I had gone down to visit this art school with my sister. I actually remember that trip. She got pulled over and talked her way out of a speeding ticket, saying that her speedometer wasn't working. It's like, I don't understand. Because this cop was in front of us and kept speeding up, and she kept just going along with the ride. He's like, I was doing 90, ma'am. He goes, oh, I didn't know. And he let us go. But yeah, I was like, I really don't know if I want to be a graphic designer after that. I applied. I got accepted, but I didn't go. But I knew I always wanted to do marine biology, just because also scuba diving.
Yeah.
You know, I was a big fan of Jacques Cousteau.
But had you scuba dived?
I'd never.
You had the books, and you would watch maybe some nature shows on television.
Well, and then when we would go to the Shedd Aquarium, you could watch the diver clean the aquarium and feed the fish.
Yeah.
And I was just like, "That I want to be that guy."
Nice.
And so I ended up going to the community college, and I focused on art. So I was the first, you know, year of college, I did art, and I took all these art classes, and then I ended up going to the school my girlfriend had gone to, because I was like, I don't want free college. I should just throw my life away and make this mistake early.
The classic high school relationship mistake.
Yep. So I went then to this school in Northern Illinois, which made even less sense because I didn't know what I wanted to do in college anymore.
You just want to be with her.
That's right. I followed the PUSS.
But your parents must have had...
Nah, well, my parents were divorced, so my mom was doing it. She really wanted just me to be happy and not be sad. So she was like, yeah, do whatever, you know, and we could get financial aid because since they were divorced, the situation was more dire, so we could get more financial aid.
You just had to choose to be the dependent of the parent with lower income?
Well, I mean, I lived with her, so
yeah,
that's pretty much how that worked out. And so I jumped around from, I went from an art major to then, I think, pre-dentistry. I did business. I did everything until I landed on molecular biology. And then there was this kind of family issue that my relationship with... So my mom had moved then. Mm-hmm. So I started going to college at this school, Northern Illinois. My mom had met a guy, moved to Florida.
Okay.
Which is key because that will then act as the precipitator of me going to Florida to study marine biology. But in the meantime, I then moved in with my dad when I would be home from college.
Mm-hmm.
And then our relationship dissolved and he threw me out of the house. It's a terrible long story, and he was a very bad person, but it boiled down to him like stealing my federal tax returns and opening up credit cards in my name and
good
then maxing them all out.
Was he kind of a grifter type?
Yeah, I mean, it was always, how can he make a buck? And when he tried to do off his kids, that was kind of like...
Yeah.
And then when I called him out on it, he threw me out of the house.
Hey, I'd appreciate if you didn't steal my taxes.
I remember that phone call. I was at the dorm in DeKalb, Illinois, and I'm screaming in the hallway because I caught him, and he just tried to lie his way out of it. And I was like, I had a printout of his signature signing my name with his handwriting.
Wow.
From the federal government. And so I didn't speak to him for like... probably 4 years.
These are a lot of things to have happen in a short period of time for a teenage kid. You're still dealing with teenage hormones.
Yeah, I was like I was still like probably 19 at the time, 19 turning 20. And so I was like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. And my mom's like, you should come down here. And I was like, I could study marine biology like I've always wanted to.
That's great.
So I applied at the school, Florida Atlantic University. And my grades were pretty good, so I essentially graduated in 4 years with transferring twice in
with
college.
All that stuff. So say that happens in year X plus four, you're
right.
Done.
So I say essentially because in order to graduate after, I actually walked down the aisle, got my diploma, but I had to go back another, I guess... semester and take a poetry class because I had missed one requirement to get my diploma. So I'd walked. I technically graduated in 98, but I didn't get my diploma until 99.
And you had, so going back over this, marine biology and then chemistry was like a minor?
So in Illinois, I had my degree was going to be molecular biology.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what allowed me to transfer and not lose time because I'd had all these science requirements that I needed. So when I went to Florida, I could focus on all the marine biology courses.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was able to take all those and just pick up where I'd left off. So I was like, well, I might as well just double major because I have enough requirements for both.
Mm-hmm.
So that I could. So I had molecular and marine biology. And I'd also taken enough almost, I could have almost triple majored, but I had enough biochemistry classes so I could minor in it. So,
see, the whole, throughout this, you don't seem like one of those like driven, determined little kids, like, I can't go out to that party. I've got to succeed and do this in life. And yet, like, you managed to tick off all these things. I was kind of similar. Like, I got my degree in engineering, but then I had enough math courses. I got a minor. It didn't feel like that substantial, but I remember when they were like, if you take this one class, you could. And I thought, yeah, makes me feel way cooler.
Right.
2 degrees.
Well, I was always such a, like, in high school, I actually was out of a class of 425. I was ranked, like, I think, like 18,
mm-hmm.
my GPA. And I cared, I think. Up until that point. And then in college, I wasn't maybe the best student, but I wanted to succeed. And I was always kind of the imaginary dreamer kid in high school. Like, I hate to admit this, but I played probably with G.I. Joes well into high school because I fucking loved them.
But G.I. Joes were not the most, like, dynamic of thing to play with, really. The tanks were cool. The guys themselves.
Shut your mouth.
I mean, the parachute guy, fun. But just, like, looking at G.I. Joe.
Well, you didn't know. I had a lot of stuff. I think the only thing we didn't have was the aircraft carrier.
Oh, okay. If you had that tank.
I had the mobile command center. I had all sorts of mobilized tanks.
And would you...
We would do convoys through the house.
Yeah.
The best part is I got my brother, who was 2 years older than me, so I probably, I'd say like maybe freshman year, I was like 5'6", and you know, I had thick glasses with tinted lenses, because my dad's like, hey, tinted lenses will make you look cool. I look
were
like,
they the changers?
He managed to make me look like a sex offender as a freshman year in high school, but no, they were like... graduated tint on brown plastic frames, and also I had the pubic mustache coming in that I hadn't shaved yet, and it just looked like that. Hey, that's the creepy uncle. He wants to give massages all the time. Yeah, it was awful. So between that freshman year and sophomore year, like, I went through this metamorphosis where, like, I shaved that off and I got contact lenses and I turned into quite a looker. That ugly duckling, ugly duckling became a swan. It just, like, you look at the pictures in the yearbook, you're like, I'm glad that kid died. I'm glad this exchange student took this kid's place.
That shifty-eyed uncle-looking fellow.
Oh, it was the worst. And it was amazing how that transformation changed my whole high school life. Like, I got picked on left and right my freshman year, but then it seemed as if everyone forgot about that kid. Cause
you show up, like, first day of sophomore season, and you've got maybe the same hair, same clothes, but just different glasses.
No, I got a good haircut, too. I got a cool hip haircut. I started to grow my fucking mullet hair, which I don't know if that's cool, but everybody seemed to be doing it at the time in like the early 90s. So I was like, I'll do it too. And of course, in the summertime, I would get really tan. I probably could get very dark if I went in the sun anymore, but I'm so worried about skin cancer that. Mm-hmm. But back then, I would spend all summer and I was just so dark and I just looked really different.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
How'd that feel, like, going from this kid that everyone picks? So you've lived that ugly
girls, like,
life.
Actually looked at me like, hey. I was like, well, I don't understand any of this.
I picture you with some dolphin books under your arm, just head down, going to class. Don't bother me. I'm still the same guy.
Oh, yeah. Me and my best friend, we were still dorks, but we were cutesy little dorks. Mm-hmm. So we were, like, caught between this world of, you know, the dorks and the cool kids. Because people liked us, and because we would be the silly kids in class, and the two of us would always be, because his last name was S-A-R, and mine was S-A-M.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd be always sitting next to me, so we'd just talk and make jokes, and I think people were like, ah, they're all right, they make jokes.
Yeah.
Those two dickheads.
That was mostly me and my friends. Were you like a class clown? I was never that much of a class clown, but I love to get the room laughing a lot.
Yeah, me too. I loved attention. And it was funny. In high school, we always talked about, because we're from Chicago, we're like, we should go to Second City. We should do that. We should try to, you know, do comedy. And he just wouldn't do it. So he went to IIT to study engineering. And that was always a dream of mine to do that too. And so once I graduated down in Florida and I got the marine biology degree and I actually got to scuba dive for the first time, there was just this piece of me that was always like, always still wanted to make people laugh. And that was just the way I always diffused the situation, is that I would just make a joke or be silly. And so I actually went to, I lived in Grand Cayman for a year. As a marine biologist, and I traveled to, like, Belize and Venezuela.
That life seems pretty cool. Like, even if you're real broke, and what are you doing, research stuff? Or you live with other people, like a bunch of post-grad types?
So I graduate undergrad, and I was like, I don't know what to do now. I guess I'll go to grad school. So I got a job at this place that they built these upscale aquariums for rich people, essentially. So all these millionaires on the South Florida coast had all these huge, you know, aquariums ranging from 500 to 5,000 gallons in their home.
Wow.
So I would go with this other guy, and we would clean the aquariums.
I thought you were going to say you scuba dived in.
No, I could get in one of them. You had to get in one to clean it. It was so big. But essentially, I created the term aquarium biologist so I wouldn't feel stupid, but I was just like an aquarium cleaner. it was called Living Color, and they made all these big aquariums for, like, museums and zoos. And so while I was going to grad school studying marine biology, this opportunity came up where they had built an aquarium in Grand Cayman, and they needed someone to run it. So it was like this 35,000-gallon shark tank. It was like 35 feet long. It was 15 feet high, and they needed someone to live there and operate. And I was like, oh, yes, me, I'll go. I don't care. And so I went, and I lived there a year. And so from there, I decided, I was like, I got tired of the island life. It was very, I got very homesick. And I had also a girlfriend back in Miami.
What had happened with the Northern Illinois girlfriend?
Well, when I moved to Florida, because I didn't have anywhere else to live, so I went to go live with my mom. We were like, oh, we'll try and make it work long distance between Chicago and Fort Lauderdale, which was stupid.
Yeah.
And I think she almost immediately started seeing someone else. And she came and visited me once or twice, but I was just like, it just wasn't worth it.
You know,
especially at that age. You're like, yeah, I'm different now.
I'm cool, Tony, now.
Goodbye. So, yeah. So she, I got, well, I didn't say I got rid of her, but we broke up. And I'd met this, like, half Dominican, half Cuban girl who actually worked at that company, Living Color. Her name was Griselda, and she was fiery.
She was
6 years older than me, but she was just she's a beautiful, tall Latin woman. So
who
she
liked,
was like,
marine biologists.
No, she liked sexual intercourse, which was all right with me. But yeah, so she was 6 years older, though, but she was, I think, thinking about marriage and stuff at that point. I was like, I don't know about any of that.
I'm a kid.
Right, but
I'm living the island life.
It was like the first time, like, I remember the first time we hooked up, I was just about to leave for Grand Cayman.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had this conference up in Orlando, so I drove all the way up to Orlando from Fort Lauderdale, like at top speed. It's like, I gotta see it before I go. And of course, you know, I spent the night, and then I had to leave in the morning because I was leaving in another day or so. But I was like, I have to do this. This is what being young and adventure means. So I just blazed up there, and we had sex all night. And then, of course, that was like always in the background, because when I went to Grand Cayman, all I was doing was thinking about this beautiful, tall Cuban girl that I had been seeing. And that was part of the reason I think I'd left, too, because I just was like, well, I got to get back to that girl.
Are you looking at the fish that are kind of like finning around, looking at you like, we need you, buddy?
Hey, where you going, buddy? Women has been probably the primary reason why I've made terrible choices in my life.
Do you consult with the fish and other aquatic life? Like, gang, you get it, right?
Like, hey, you'll be fine. It was actually, I have to say that Grand Cayman was one of the best experiences of my life. I look back at that and think about it. At such a young age, this boy from Chicago was in Grand Cayman, taking care of fish and scuba diving almost every other day. It was amazing. It was surreal. It's still a dream when I think about it.
And what were the dives mostly like? What were you doing on the actual scuba dives?
I would try to collect fish for the aquarium. But also, I was just doing it just to scuba dive. So, you know, I didn't log a lot of those dives, but, you know, I dove probably like 100 dives on the island.
But when you're like, you're almost tasked with like, hey, we need a prettier collection for tourists to spend money. Does it feel like that? Or does it feel like, no, this is for research and this is important?
No, I never felt like research. I just wanted to put cool stuff in the tank. And the owner, he didn't want to pay money because I was working out this arrangement with this company in the Florida Keys to bring us sharks, because most of the waters around Grand Cayman were protected.
Mm-hmm.
And so it cost so much money to bring them, but we had purchased 6 sharks from this company, and they sent them via air, and they had to sit in the airport and clear customs and these giant tanks. But so we had 2 nurse sharks, which ended up getting up to about, I want to say, 7 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had 2 bonnet head hammerheads. So they're like a hammerhead, except it's more of it looks almost like a half circle, the head.
Yeah, okay.
And then I had 2 black tip reef sharks.
And you're like, when you're looking at them, what do you have to know about them? You have to know, like, the salinity of the water that they enjoy, the temperature.
Well, I mean, I tried to make the water mirror what was actually out in the ocean, because that I mixed.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had to mix that seawater, and so it wasn't shock to the system. I had this was a pretty involved system, but there was a mixing tank that you would mix it all up in, and then you'd have to divert the water flow into it.
So what do the ingredients look like? You have a tank
It looks like salt. It looks like salt, but it's...
And you're just shoveling it in?
Yeah, but I have to make sure the salinity is right.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also buffers, and, you know, I have to make sure the pH is correct.
What's a buffer?
It allows the pH to not pass a certain... It stabilizes it, so it's not jumping up and down. It basically won't allow it to pass a certain point unless you really, really push it.
And what's more dangerous, more acidic or more basic?
Both. I mean, there's a really narrow range that most sea life can tolerate. Invertebrates, it's very, very sensitive. So, like, you know, like shrimps and clams and any bivalve, really.
Mm-hmm.
If
call them bivalves?
Yeah, clams.
Clams are bivalves?
Yeah. Just
I've never heard that.
The way they suck in and out.
Oh, that's hilarious.
The siphon.
Check out this bivalve.
yeah, but they're very sensitive. So, like, home aquariums, anytime you have invertebrates in the tank, they will die very easily if you don't be careful.
You got to go get yourself a buffer. Good to know.
Yeah. Well, corals are very hard to keep at home. And I generally think that anytime you want to have a home aquarium, you should just stick to easy fish that are hardy, because otherwise you're just murdering animals.
Was there ever something when you're like out there diving around and you see it and go, that thing only lives here. It's really, really sensitive, but I still want to catch it.
No, we didn't do any of that. I actually got a green moray eel.
That's what I was going to just randomly say as an eel, but I have no idea if they are.
It was awesome.
How was it like catching an eel?
It was really tough. Yeah, that one I got on a fishing line.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the coolest thing, because once it was in the tank, I could feed it almost by hand. I had a feeding stick for it,
mm-hmm.
and it would just come out. You'd see it, he'd see the food, and he'd come out, and he'd take it, and then he'd go back in his hole. It was pretty fantastic, and he was super soft.
Yeah, I think I've touched an eel, and we went to Hawaii once when I was a kid and got to scuba dive and went along this reef and saw like a turtle, which was cool, some bigger fish, maybe a shark, but the eel, and they had a name for him. They're like, oh, that's Grandpa. He's been here forever. And he would just, exactly like you said, like come out, hello, and then dip back into his hole. It was pretty fascinating. I thought, like, what a weird existence.
I mean, they look terrifying, but they're just breathing that way. Like, they look like they're going, but that's how they breathe. So it looks like they're always mad.
Is it like a gill?
Yeah, because they're a fish. But it looks different than a fish because their mouth is configured differently. But they still are breathing in the water, and it's coming out the gills that are just behind the eye.
But they have to bring it in. How do fish do it? They don't open their mouth, really. Like trout?
They do. It's not as dramatic.
Oh. So that's how a fish really breathes? Is it like brings in water? I know it sounds so stupid. I don't know.
Yeah, water passes over the gills, and that's where your gas exchange happens.
Okay, take it easy.
They know they have to always come up and go. They just pop up.
I guess I didn't know
how sorry, it works. Sorry, I attacked you.
Really?
Take it easy.
Hey, I'm just asking questions over here. Because I think that, look, in my mind, the gills are sort of, as they're moving through the water, working as this, almost like an air filter. Like, oh, we're sort of breaking down the oxygen in this water and bringing it into. I didn't realize that it had to go into their body and then exit. And how do they filter it?
It passes over the gills, like, much in the way that when we breathe in air. It's just basically this gas exchange is happening on a very small level in your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
But since there is dissolved oxygen in water, that's how it happens.
It seems, though, that, like, you know, because when we split apart hydrogen and oxygen, it seems like you need a team of, you know, people in hazmat suits kind of turn that knob and then they do it.
We're all mysterious biological machines.
But the fish just do it naturally.
We're doing it.
I know, but we're doing it in a way that to me is more intuitive, I suppose.
I mean, we can't really see it, but air is a compound.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like water. It's just pure oxygen that we're breathing in currently.
No, it's mostly nitrogen.
Yeah. And then so the fish, the hydrogen, I suppose, in their equation is our nitrogen.
No, I mean, they're still taking the oxygen from the air,
mm-hmm.
like we are. We're not getting any benefit out of the nitrogen. It's like, to us, it's a inert gas that we breathe.
Yeah.
But when you scuba dive at depth, that's when it becomes dangerous, because that air content that's in the compressed cylinder, it's now at different concentrations, and that nitrogen level in your body raises.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you can get decompression sickness and whatnot.
Yeah, the bends and all mm-hmm. that. Man. So you're living kind of a dangerous life, kind of a cool bad boy life, jet setting up to Orlando, having intercourse with exotic women.
So I came back. I spent a year down there, and it was amazing. And I regret not going to Cuba. That's the one thing I will regret my entire life.
And did Griselda invite you to Cuba?
No, but you weren't legally allowed to go there from the United States, but from Grand Cayman, I could go.
Mm-hmm. You just hop on a boat.
That's right. You just tell them not to stamp your passport.
Mm-hmm. Really?
You have to put like a $50 bill in there and they wouldn't stamp your passport.
Really?
There was a plane that left from Grand Cayman. It was like an old Russian freighter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like propellers. It was very scary looking, but it would go back and forth from Cuba to Grand Cayman. And I was too afraid. I couldn't do it.
Even as tan as you could get?
It wasn't about being tan. Back? I was just afraid that I would be the one that got caught. Something would happen to me. So I didn't go, but I came back to the United States, and then I got back into grad school. Like, I'd picked up where I'd left off, and then I went to Belize to do a research trip on the other barrier reef that people don't know about. It's the world's second largest barrier reef.
What's the name of it?
The Belize Barrier Reef.
The not-so-great barrier reef.
That's right. Except this one, most of it's dead. I think almost all of it's dead. But you can see it from high altitude. You can see that it just hugs the coast. It's very pretty. But then I went to Venezuela twice.
It's pretty in what way? From above or down below?
No, I mean underwater. They're at depth. So the reef that's very shallow, that's all dead. But down under about, 100 feet of water where there's like a continental shelf and then it just drops.
Mm-hmm.
That's all very healthy and pretty because it's deep. And
yeah. Oh, okay.
But so like by the age of 23, I'd felt like I'd done some pretty cool stuff. And that was all by 23. I was like, wow, how am I going to ever top that?
Yeah.
And then when I got back to the United States, after all those travels and stuff, I worked with sea turtles in South Florida. I was doing like, I would collect eggs and we'd do counts on, we'd harvest the nests and make sure that we move the newborn turtles to a safe space and make sure that we'd get as many as possible getting back into the water.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what am I going to do? I can't do this. It was, not a very lucrative job. And then 9/11 happened, and I was kind of in a weird place. Like, I was remember that morning very vividly. Like, it just got quiet. No planes were flying. I didn't even find out about it until, like, probably almost 10 in the morning, and I was on the East Coast.
This is in Florida where you're
at. Yeah, and as I was driving home, I remember hearing Howard Stern, like, they're talking about it. I'm like, this isn't funny. This is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then I turned on the TV and I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh. And so I remember like 2 weeks later, I just packed up everything. I moved to Chicago because I'd always wanted to do the comedy stuff. And so I was like, well, I've had a good run doing this and I got to say I did it and I was good at it. That's the one thing I like. I've done a lot of different things, but they've always seemed to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always like, well, what's the next challenge? So then I packed up everything. I moved to Chicago. I didn't have a job. I got a job in a molecular biology lab. And then I took an improv class at IO.
Yeah.
And so that's when I really became a bad scientist, because
that bug got in you.
In 2000, I'd say 2 to 2007. So for 5 years, I was a working scientist, but I was doing comedy, like learning, taking classes and all this stuff. And that's when I just knew that's what I was supposed to do. Like, it was like this thing I'd always knew I should do and always had interest in. But once I did it, I was like, I knew that that's what I should do. It was crazy. Like,
it's
pretty
cheesy.
What is it? Yeah, it's fair. That's fair.
No, I like it. I like hearing it. That, like, because, man, I like doing it, but I don't know that there was ever a moment where I was like, this is the thing for me. And I remember being at an open, I've been telling this story a lot recently, because there was this guy, Craig. I think I know his last name, but I don't want to guess it. But he was so good. And he just, one day we were out, I was like, man, what do you think? You know, we'd been both doing it for like a few months, like going to the open mic every Sunday. And he was like, meh, it's just not for me.
I
was like, but you're good at it. He goes, yeah, it's fun, but like, so it's nice to hear that like you had like the definitive.
Well, yeah, so I didn't start doing stand-up. I was doing improv.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time it seemed like just this fun hobby to do while I was, you know, working. And then I met my first wife, who I've been married a couple of times. That's fun.
The women, you know what? Let's take a little break and really dig into, I want to hear the molecular biology lab stuff. And then this, like this Bukowski-esque, like association with the women in your life and how they've like impacted.
I like
influence.
Women.
All right. Cool life so far for old Tony Sam, marine biology, molecular biology. We'll get into more of that, as how his life turned from that and got into the comedy game in part two, which I don't know. I just really enjoyed our chat. I hope you enjoyed it so far as well, and try some of that foam top from Beechwood. I can't remember if we've had it on the show before or not. It, for some reason, rings kind of a bell as far as when people say, oh, I like something just kind of, you know, not too beersy. I'll go for like a blonde ale. And it's just kind of light and crisp and nice. And so if you know someone that's like, oh, I only drink Bud Light or things like that, this will be too beersy for them. But still, maybe it's the gateway into turning them towards someone if you're so inclined. Anyway, Tony, fascinating fellow and a really interesting trajectory and outlook. And I don't know, if you come back and listen to part two. And as promised at the beginning, I'll play you now some music from those kids at Fat Camp. Thanks to those of you who subscribe and rate the show and tell your friends about it. If you have beer suggestions or you'd like to be a guest or any of the above, a subject you'd like to hear about, let me know. We have still yet to hear. Is that the right way to say that? We have still yet to hear. That doesn't sound right. We still haven't heard from a flat earth expert, but if you know someone, send them my way, and maybe we'll all be enlightened. Anyhow, here is a song called Raining Snow, which sounds kind of like a silly title. They're young kids. They're just out of high school. And from a band with a kind of a silly-sounding name, Fat Camp. But their sound is pretty good and a little bit more grown up than maybe those two things would sound like. I don't mean to disparage the names of things. They're irrelevant. What matters is the sound quality. I think this is quite good. I hope you enjoy it as well. This is from Fat Camp, as I mentioned. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave.